Welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, and the line is open right now for you. 1-800-462-7413. And along with your calls, of course, some interesting topics, Zorba?
Yes, we're going to talk about the new food pyramid, which has become the new food plate. Mm-hmm. Talk about really what that's about, what that means, how we should think about eating and food in America. We are absolutely always thinking about food, certainly mm-hmm. I am. Yep. And then we're going to talk about sunscreen, the new FDA rules. What does that mean? And more importantly, what does it mean for the sunscreens that we've been using in the past? I mean, we're actually bringing truth to advertising. And we'll see what that means for your health.
Mm-hmm. We'll get to the phones at 1-800-462-7413. But first, Zorba, a few weeks ago on your show, says Cindy, who sent us these that are right here in front of me. I won't blow the whistle on what they are. Cindy writes, a few weeks ago on your show, Tom mentioned that he did not care for dry roasted nuts. Maybe these will change his mind. Enjoy, Cindy.
Oh, how and sweet. Cindy said now, these are not virtual nuts. These are real nuts.
What do you mean, virtual?
Well, I mean, somebody would say I'm mean, dry roasted nuts, you know.
They
you
are
know,
like, people who,
like,
who,
virtual,
who
like those
speak
e-cards.
Irrationally.
Well, like those e-cards, which are not real cards. They're kind of virtual cards. Right. This is a real
these
nut.
Are dry roasted nuts they from Cindy delicious. In St. Louis, and I'm going to try a couple, and you're going to try a couple.
And, yeah, see, and you're going to see, what see you yeah, yeah, but I know what I think about dry roasted nuts. Mmm. Oh. Mmm. Mmm. These are really
these
good.
These are quite good.
Here, try some, folks. Listen.
Yeah, right.
Mm. Mm. Well, what do you think?
I think they're delicious.
Go on.
Cindy changed my mind.
Love it. Thank you so much, Cindy. Thank you. These are absolutely delicious.
I'm a new man. And at last, 1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And Zorba, let's welcome our first caller, a listener in Lakota, North Dakota. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
I was calling because I've been having some back pain for about 3 years. It's mainly like when I sleep, and when I first wake up, it kind of extends throughout the morning a little bit. Now, 3 years ago, I was working out in the oil field in western North Dakota, and I injured my back because I heard a snapping and lost feeling in my legs. I went to the doctor, and I've been going to doctors since then, and they've all kind of said everything from, just a pulled muscle to a slipped disc to a herniated disc to you name it, they've all said the same thing.
So you work in the oil fields?
I used to. I was a truck driver out there, and now I'm just a truck driver in general.
Mm. Now, sympathy comes your way. Probably not mine. Brings to mind, I'm just back from a little vacation on the beach, and the last day on the beach vacation, I injured my back by raising the beach umbrella. Nobody's going to say poor Tom on that.
My heart bleeds for you, Tom. Yeah. Absolutely. Here it is. He's on the oil fields dealing with sand in a pipe, and you're on the beach dealing with sand on the beach. Please. Well, getting back to the issue, it's never good when you hear a snap and a pop in your back and you have pain. It's never good. But indeed, you may have some sort of a disc. I do have a question before we go in. Have you been scanned, had a CAT scan or an MR scan at all?
I've had an X-ray, and the doctor just kind of went, oh, well, there's nothing there with the X-ray.
Yeah, but an MR scan, an MRI scan or a CAT scan is going to show you a lot about your disc. So you have not had that.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, they haven't sent me in for that. And they've pretty much said it might be your bed, and I'm like, I don't know about that.
Well, this is you did it on your job, so it's a workman's comp issue. How long ago did this happen?
About 3 years ago.
Did you tell your employer?
Yeah, I had notified them,
mm-hmm.
and they're like, oh well, it's probably nothing real serious.
Okay. So I want to do a couple things. I really want to address this workman's comp issue, but first let's talk about your back. back pain comes often from injuries, lifting things, and a lot of times we don't know what it's from. We'll do an MRI scan. You may have a disc. That's going to give you the answer. If you do an MRI scan, it's going to show you, you know, what's going on. But you have to be cautious in weighing that information, because if I take 100 people on the street who have no back pain at all, 10 to 20% of them will have, quote, slipped discs on the MRI scan, and they don't have any back pain. So the presence of a disc doesn't mean that's causing the pain. Generally, pain that is in the back is going to, from a disc, is going to go down your legs. It's going to be lightning-like and sharp. That's generally the issue, but not always. But that's often the issue. So getting an MRI scan, I think, it's important to find out what this pain is from. Getting back to the issue at hand. Workman's comp laws are different in every state, and I am certainly not a lawyer by any means. But if you talk to your employer at that time, was this a big corporation or a small person you were working for?
In North Dakota, they're huge. Mm-hmm. They're one of the main oil field trucking companies in North Dakota.
Well, what you have to do if you talk to your employer about it is you have to find out, do you have an open claim for this?
I didn't put in a claim for it, no.
No, but you talked to them about it at the time. You have certain rights, and I don't know how long those rights are. They may be gone after 3 years. They may be gone after 7 years. They may be gone after 1 year. That I have no idea. But first of all, you should find out immediately whether or not you have an open claim on this, because you told your boss, you said you had pain. Even though you haven't done anything in 3 years, it doesn't matter. It still goes to an administrative judge or somebody to look at. And I think you should file a workman's comp claim, and then you should get an MRI scan paid by the workman's comp insurance and find out what this is. You clearly had pain. You didn't have pain beforehand. You had an injury on the job, and now you can't lift yourself out of bed, you know, without pulling on something. There's something going on.
Okay.
We don't have a diagnosis for this, and that's what we need. You need imaging.
All right.
Good luck to you. Let us know what happens,
please.
You.
Yep. Will do.
We appreciate the call. Thank you so much. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And a listener with us now, Zorba, in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Fine. What's up?
A couple years ago, I was diagnosed with premature atrial contractions, the extra heartbeat between normal beats. Went through sonograms, found no blockages, normal blood pressure, EKG was fine. You could see obviously the outline of the extra beat in there. My cardiologist really attributed it to stress, and you know, we cut down on the caffeine and the alcohol, tried to make some lifestyle changes. But recently, they've kind of picked up in frequency. My question for Dr. Zorba is, could this lead to something a little bit more serious? Because my cardiologist and my primary have both assured me, you know, people live with this and it doesn't lead to anything else.
Right. And actually, that is the case. PACs, premature atrial contractions, these extra beats in the top part of the heart, they don't cause sudden death. We used to get rid of them with anti-arrhythmic agents. We used to give people these agents that would actually stop the PACs. And then somebody finally did a study and found out that actually the drugs we were giving to stop the beats killed people and the beats didn't. It was one of those examples of, we'll cut down on the beats. Hey, I don't have any beats anymore, but I'm dead. Because that's what it is. So the side effect of the drugs were greater than the benefit for the drugs. There are a couple things, though, you can do. First of all, you cut down on the caffeine and alcohol, made some lifestyle changes. That's number one. Caffeine, for some people, will produce that. Are you on a beta blocker, by the way?
I do take 3 meds for my blood pressure because it's pretty difficult.
Yeah.
One of which is atenolol, which my primary said would work to try and curb the PACs.
Mm-hmm. Right. What you want to do, and this would be my recommendation, there are a number of beta blockers in the field, atenolol being one of them that's very good as a generic. If you're on 3 pills for blood pressure, one of the things you may do that may help the symptomatology of the PACs, that's usually what people are bothered, they just don't like the way it feels, is to either increase the atenolol to the maximal dose, which is generally 100 milligrams a day, or 50 twice a day. Some people have to take atenolol twice a day. Or switch to another beta blocker. There's several other beta blockers in the field, all of which work a little bit different. One is called Natalol. And see if another beta blocker will make you less symptomatic. And that's kind of what I would do. Since you cut out the caffeine, I would go towards trying a different beta blocker. But to give you that reassurance, you don't need to be treated to reduce the number of beats. What you need is to be to reduce the symptomatology and stay away from those things that can make it a little bit worse.
Yeah, I've tried meditation and finding a happy place as well. So maybe it'll work out.
Well, meditation and finding a happy place is always what we want. We always want to go to our happy place.
Right.
So good luck to you, and I would definitely keep up with the meditation, definitely.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks. We appreciate the call. Now, I'm looking for some medication to get me into that happy place.
I was just thinking that. I want to go to my happy place. Don't bother me. I'm in my happy place.
Give me the pill. What is it?
I want to go to my happy place. It's such a wonderful statement. You know, I'm going to use that for the rest of the day today.
Before we take our next call, Zorba, there's been a change. I was just thinking back through the history of this program. How many different food pyramids have we gone through?
Wait a minute. It started out with the four basic food groups.
Yeah, that's right.
Which no one could ever remember. I always thought the four basic
foods. Dairy, meat, vegetables, and dessert or something.
But in America, I would always make a joke. The four basic food groups are chocolate, sugar, starch, and grease.
That's what people actually eat. Then we came up with the idea, if somebody did, of the food pyramid.
Well, and before the food pyramid, they came out with sort of a bowl called the food bowl.
I don't remember that.
Well, it lost to the food pyramid. And do you know how much politics goes into these things?
Yeah, I'm sure a lot, because all of the, they're all lobby groups.
You got the meat people, you've got the grain people, you have the dairy people, you have the fish people, you have the green people, you have the yellow people, you have the red. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of politics.
So now, anyway, no more pyramid.
The pyramid is done. And the pyramid, when it first came out, I thought was really good because it had a chance to visualize things. And at the top of the pyramid were oils and sweets. So the idea is we should eat very little oils and sweets. Well, in America, we kind of know that right now. Yeah. And the fact is nobody really paid attention to that part of it. But the thing I like about it,
and you'll obviously tell us whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, I like about it is it's a visual thing that makes a little bit of sense because it's based on food on a plate.
That's right. Who eats on a pyramid?
Yeah, I know. And who can remember what the various things
that right. And so the really nice thing about this, the concept was that when a mother is preparing food for her child, this was the idea, what should be on the plate. That was the idea. And if you look at it, it's very interesting. I'm looking at it right now. And, of course, we'll put it on our website, zorbapastor.org. Mm-hmm. If you look at it and you look at the fruits and vegetables just on the left-hand side of the plate, there's less fruits and there are more vegetables. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. They're not equal. And you can visually look at that. You can say, okay, a little bit of fruit, but a lot of vegetables on the left side. On the right-hand side, we have more grains and less protein, the idea of grains. And it used to be cereals, but we look at grains. What are grains? Well, grains are cereal.
Well, now, my wife, who pays a lot of attention to what's good for you and what isn't, objects to the grains on that plate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How healthy are grains? Actually?
Well, grains are actually very healthy, and that's where we get most of our energy. That's where we get most of our calories. We actually get them from grains, and the issues with protein is that in America, protein often means meat, and with meat, we get oil and we get fat. So grains are really important. The idea that we're having too many carbohydrates is actually that we're eating too much food.
Yeah.
The dairy is off to the right hand side. Now,
Where the drink would be. Yeah.
Now, I mean, you know, we've got to have full disclosure. We do live in the dairy state, you know, and to talk against dairy is like, to be a communist in the state of Wisconsin. I mean, I wouldn't talk against dairy. But dairy is actually very, very good. And it's low-fat dairy because the DASH diet, the diet to help hypertension, has shown that low-fat dairy products are actually very useful to prevent high blood pressure. The other thing is dairy carries with it calcium. And I now have the belief that calcium from dairy products are different from calcium tablets, that there may be something in dairy that makes calcium more able to be absorbed into the body, especially since the recent studies show that once you get to about 750 or 1,000 milligrams of calcium, you're probably at goal. So I like this concept of dairy off to the side. And like you say, it could be a drink, it could be a container of yogurt, it could be some cottage cheese.
So there it is, my plate. Where are there no dessert?
Well, we're not eating dessert in America. Dessert. There's no dessert. There's no ice cream. There's no apple pie. There's no dessert. You're right. What's missing from this plate? Dessert. All right, back to the drawing board.
1-800-462-7413. Toll free. 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, here's a listener with us now in Berea, Kentucky. Hi.
Today.
Oh, we're okay. How can we help?
Well, I am a member of a little band called Sugar Tree, and we all sing, and I have I've got some allergy and asthma issues, and I suspect that it's some of the medications that I take for those that are causing this, but if it's a high pollen day and I have a lot of sinus drainage, I have a very squeaky voice. By practice time or show time, and it's gotten so bad. My band members, they're great, and they're so accommodating. And so sometimes we have to scratch songs from the lineup, or we'll have alternate arrangements where I'll sing a lower section if the top of my range is squeaky. So it's pretty inconvenient, and I would love to have some suggestions.
I hope Zorba can help you out. I don't suppose you'd honor us with a few bars before Zorba's advice?
Sure. This is a little bit from one of my songs that I wrote for a friend who was leaving town. True wealth is being deeply known. Bounty is heaven. A hand to hold.
Very.
Ooh, lovely. Just
nice to have
lovely.
Something entertaining
just,
on the show.
Just, right. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
So is Zorba.
I'm sick of Tom. He's not entertaining at all. That's exactly it. Well, certainly the allergies and the pollens are going to affect your vocal cords.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what's going on. So let's look at what you're actually doing for it. Do you use a nasal spray, a steroid, prescription steroid nasal spray at all?
I do.
And use that once a day, twice a day?
I use it twice a day, once in the morning and then once in the evening.
Okay so that's important. Are you taking an antihistamine?
I am.
Okay, you're taking an antihistamine. And then do you wheeze at all? Do you have asthma?
I do have. I have pretty severe asthma. It's mostly under control at this point with Advair.
Advair, you're taking one puff twice a day.
Correct.
Which number? The highest number, lowest, medium? They come in different strengths.
Yeah, the medium, the 250.
The medium. Okay, the 250. Okay. Reflux at all? Do you have any reflux that you know of? Okay, so no reflux that you have. And the main problem you have is your voice is changing, right?
If I do happen to be having allergies, what happens is I won't lose just the top of my range. There'll be just a gap in the upper part. And then
I have two very specific suggestions. First of all, I would go get some over-the-counter Prilosec. Which is for reflux. Even though you don't have symptoms of reflux, the allergy stuff you have may be giving you some reflux, and you might have some acid that is going up to your vocal cords and changing your vocal cords during allergy season. And what I would do is I'd try it. I'd get over-the-counter Prilosec. I would go to the 40 milligram dose. They come in 20s, but I take two pills of the 20s. Take it in the morning when you get up on an empty stomach. That's the best way it works. And I try that for a couple of weeks. See if that does it. You may have a little acid that's basically refluxing into your vocal cords that's causing this. Be worth a try. That's the first thing I would do. If that is it, you're home free. You'll know that during allergy season, it's acid reflux, and you've got to take 20 to 40 milligrams of Prilosec in the morning. Once again, I'd start with the 40s. I'd go to the higher dose. If that fails, I'd call up your doctor, and I would get the highest dose of Advair. I'd go to the 550. And the reason is you may just need to have, during allergy season, you may need to have more steroid, which is what it is coating your vocal cords, and that'll help do it. So those are the two things I'd recommend doing. Both reflux and acid will affect your vocal cords, and also the steroid that's trying to decrease the inflammation during allergy season might also affect your vocal cords.
Okay.
And then when you get better, you have to give us a call and sing us a few more bars.
All right. All right. Well, I appreciate that.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. 800-462-7413. Before our short break, Zorba, let's play another round of Stump the Doc. Our contestant today is Holly from Elm Grove, Wisconsin, who's stumped on a bit of old motherly advice that just resurfaced. She writes, "For some reason, today in the shower, I recalled hearing my mom say to my brother, 'Don't forget to wash behind your ears.' Well, I got to thinking about what could get behind my brother's ears that would warrant additional instruction beyond washing your hands and face. I watched him play as a kid. He's 58 now. And I don't recall ever seeing him play in the sandbox with his ears or throw a ball with his ears or do much of anything with his ears, much less the small space behind them. I was never reminded to wash behind my ears. Rather, I was encouraged to dab a little perfume behind my ears. Can you tell me what evil lurks behind little boys' ears? And does it eventually go away when they grow up? I'm still single at 59, and if there's something I need to know about men's ears, I'd like to know before I do something impulsive."
Oh, gosh. My mother said, "Wash behind your ears." You know, and I always, and I, as a kid, I thought, am I dirty behind my ears? I haven't thought about that in years. You know, there's some things that disappear with time from the consciousness. And I have no idea what kids put behind their ears. You know, maybe it was gum. When I was in elementary school, I can remember Miss Schutte going around the room and checking everyone for gum. Yeah. You weren't allowed to chew gum. And I remember putting gum behind my ears to get it away, because otherwise I was going to have to go and sit in the corner. I remember that.
The mom wants the kid to be careful to wash all over.
Areas in the body that are more likely to be soiled than behind the ears. And we can't discuss those because we're on public radio.
Yeah. So should we forget to wash behind the ears or not forget?
I'm not washing behind my ears anymore. That's it. I stand in the shower and I do not pay attention to my ears.
Well, Zorba isn't wet behind the ears, but if you want to try to stump him.
Where did that come from? Wet behind the ears. The ears are usually dry. I'm wet behind the ears. What does that mean?
That's for if you do remember to wash behind the ears, but forget to dry.
Dry behind the ears. There it is.
Anyway, if you want to try to stump Zorba, you can do so by sending your questions in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have our recipe coming up and lots more of your calls, our medical myth buster, some more interesting research to talk over. Lots of good reasons for you to stick around right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. A line open for you now at 800-462-7413 if you'd like to talk with Zorba if you have a question. But before we get back to the phone, Zorba, let's do sizzling steak with roasted corn salsa.
You know, I can tell when we have recipes from the tone of your voice when something really excites you. And I think the word steak, think if I say steak, it's so Pavlovian.
The mouth is watering, definitely watering. Yeah.
Definitely, no doubt about it. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
You know, it's steak. It's a nice time of the year. It's summer. It's warm. Well, sometimes it's warm. Some days it's warm. Some days it's cold. But really, anytime you can go and you can make something on the barbie, I think it's a wonderful, you know, wonderful thing. I think it's kind
the
of
Barbie?
The Barbie. Barbecue. I'm trying
That's
to be.
That's what you
I'm
call the Barbie?
Be,
the Barbie?
Trying to be Australian. They call it the Barbie
oh,
there.
Okay. All right.
In the land of Oz.
All right.
Under. So, starts out with 3 cups of fresh corn.
3 cups of fresh corn.
That's right. Now, if you can't get fresh corn, obviously you're going to use canned corn.
But you want to take it off the cob, if
But if you have fresh corn, now for canned corn, there really is a difference between canned corn, between grade A, grade B, between a generic canned corn, a house brand, and Green Giant Niblets canned corn. That's what I've discovered, which has much less water in it and is a more robust corn. So you want to look there, and you want to look if you're going to use canned corn on something like this. And I would recommend spending that extra 25 cents and getting the high grade
well,
canned
Green
Giant. Why
not just get some frozen? Wouldn't that be better than the
frozen would be good too.
Yeah.
Frozen would be good too. 4 scallions, white and green parts, sliced separately.
4 scallions, white and green parts, sliced separately.
That's right. Yeah, two plates. I know that's a little complex for you.
No, I get it. I'm not the brightest bulb, but I do get that. Yeah, okay.
2 tablespoonfuls of unsalted butter.
2 big tea unsalted butter.
2 cloves of garlic minced.
2 cloves of garlic minced.
1.5 teaspoons of kosher salt.
1.5 teaspoons. Kosher salt.
That's right, kosher salt. You know, big clumpy salt. You could use sea salt with that, too.
Yeah.
1.5 teaspoons of ground cumin.
1.5 little tea ground cumin. Mm-hmm.
1 teaspoon of chili powder.
Little tea chili powder.
1/2 teaspoon of black pepper.
1/2 little tea black pepper.
1 plum tomato diced.
1 plum tomato diced.
1 jalapeno diced.
1 jalapeno diced.
1 pound of steak.
Finally, we get to the steak. This is sizzling steak with roasted corn salsa. It takes us how many minutes to get to the main ingredient? Okay, 1 pound of steak.
Yes, 1 pound of steak. Yes, yes. We finally got to the main ingredient in the recipe. A flank steak, sirloin steak is what you would use. Those are the steaks you'd probably use in a recipe such as this. You're going to slice it.
Okay.
You're going to slice it. I don't think I'd use tenderloin. That's kind of more expensive, and it also doesn't have sort of the fat within it that you like it. And it's okay. It's okay to have a little bit of animal fat. 1/4 cup of fresh cilantro. And if you don't like cilantro, you're not going to use it.
Okay. 1/4 cup of fresh cilantro.
By the way, do you like cilantro?
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah. See, I like cilantro.
Yeah.
Okay. So a pan roast the corn in a large dry skillet. So you want to make sure that the skillet cast iron is best. Stirring until brown, transfer to a bowl. So in other words, you put the corn in the skillet and sort of pan dry it.
Okay.
And you're drying it out. Cook the white part of the scallions until tender in butter, along with the garlic, 1 teaspoon of salt and 1/2 teaspoon of cumin, 1/2 teaspoon of chili powder and 1/4 teaspoon of black pepper. Then remove the skillet from heat, stir in the corn, tomato, and jalapenos.
Mm-hmm.
There's your salsa. Then combine the remaining spices and season the steak. Grill to the desired heat. In other words, put the steak on the grill, grill it to the desired heat. Transfer to the cutting bowl, and while the steak cools, reheat the corn mixture. Stir in the scallion greens and the cilantro. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Slice the steak into nice separate thin parts and top with the corn salsa.
It's
really not
good.
That complex.
Yeah, it sounds really good.
It's really not that complex. Slice it, enjoy. I think I would have this. I might have this maybe with a little baked potato, or I might have it maybe with something else like a sweet potato. You might have it with some rice. You might have it with little couscous, something like that on there. Maybe a nice fresh salad.
Yeah, it all sounds delicious.
Sounds really good. I think the nice idea about this is if we look at America and how we eat beef, and I like beef. I mean, I like beef like most other people in the country. It's picking the type of beef you want to have it and having it in an amount with a tasty dish. We get most of our beef through hamburgers. And the reality is having an occasional steak like this, I think, is good for your heart.
Yeah, I'm just picturing my plate. With the steak
protein. You've got the veggies over there. You want to add a little fruit, maybe add some apple. That would be nice with a little bit of fruit. And then, like I said, a little whole grain, maybe a whole grain pasta off to the
side. I don't think I want to have milk with this.
No, but you might have
a
dessert. You could have a container of yogurt for dessert.
Whatever. Anyway, it sounds delish.
It is. And if you want a copy of this heart healthy, guilt-free, tasty recipe, you can come to our website at zorbapastor.org. On that website, you can find the archives of our other wonderful recipes. You can sign up for our podcast. And again, you can find us on Facebook. That's zorbapastor.org.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Well, I have a question today for the doctor about generic prescriptions versus what I call the original recipe.
Yeah.
And the prescription that I have had some difficulty with as a generic is for Protonix. Now, I don't have acid reflux. I was given Protonix initially because I'd had bypass surgery 7 years ago, and they load you up with all kinds of medications, as you know. And
but let's go back to one question.
Sure.
You were put on Protonix post-op.
Uh-huh.
Okay,
right.
And you're taking Protonix now, and have you stopped taking Protonix at all?
I took the Protonix for about probably 2 years.
Okay. I have a suggestion, a couple of suggestions. First of all, PPIs are the name of a group of drugs. Protonix, Nexium, Omeprazole, which is Prilosec, are in the group. Generic drugs, and like you said, original recipe, they're actually both the original recipe. And it's very important to establish that. A generic drug and a trade-branded drug are exactly the same molecule when you measure them, period. It is not, one recipe is not different than the other. It's exactly the same recipe. The pill may be a different color. The pill may be a different shape. The pill is a different manufacturer, but the FDA requires certain things with generics that they be within 5% or 3% or 2%. I don't know the exact amount of exactly the same amount of drug in the pill. So they are both the original recipe. One is expensive, one is cheap. When the generic comes out, there is no reason to get the name brand. There's some people who say, well, the name brand worked better for me. And my answer to that is that's the placebo effect of the name brand, because the drugs, if they are established, and proprietary generic drugs are exactly the same. Let me talk about daily use of PPIs. We only want to take them when we need them. We used to give everyone every day because we said, once you're on them, you really have to stay on them to protect your stomach. And the answer is no. Sometimes you don't want to take them every day because you don't want to take a pill every day. So I tell some people, you may need it every day. Go off of it and see what happens. And they may say, hey, I only need it twice a week when I go out for Mexican food, or when I know I'm under a lot of stress, or when I'm traveling. That's when I take it. Other people say, I have to take it every day because as soon as I go off it, it causes me a problem. So generics are great. That's what most drugs in America now, most of the major drugs in America are really generic. Which is really one. Wonderful. It's going to cut down on our drug costs and has. And use your PPIs as needed. No matter what your doctor says, you may not need it every day because it's always good to reduce your drug load. Good luck to you. One of the question you have is really a very important question, but they are both the original recipe.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, doctor.
Thanks so much for the call. 1-800-462-7413, toll free. That's 800-462-7413. And before we get to the break, Zorba, let's take this quick note from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox from a listener named Rob. Rob has an answer to a question you posed a few weeks ago about oats. He writes, during the raisin oat muffins recipe, you expressed your opinion about oats, specifically instant and old-fashioned. I am the oat buyer for a major food manufacturer, so I think I can bring some clarity to your confusion on the oats. The difference is only in the flake size and thickness. These differences will change the cook time and the feel. Instant and quick oats are made by cutting oat groats into smaller pieces and then pressing them into flakes. The thickness for the flakes will range from 15 to 24 thousandth inch. The old-fashioned flake will range from 28 to 32 thousandths inch and is made using the whole oat groat. All of the oats are an excellent nutritional choice for the consumer, A check of the product's nutrition panel will show this.
I never knew that.
Isn't that a, that's really interesting?
It's really interesting. So it's the manufacturing of the oat that actually is the difference between quick oat and old-fashioned oats. I don't eat oatmeal very often,
yeah.
But I can't tell the difference when I have it between old-fashioned oats because I have
you never examined the size
of
the
oat. Look at it. I can't tell the difference in the taste. It all tastes like oats. But I sort of wondered why it's instant and why anyone would buy oats that take longer to cook. But that's part of life. Very, very interesting that they both have very high and are excellent nutritional value. And, of course, with the new food plate, that means a lot because oat is a grain.
We like hearing your instant or old-fashioned feedback. Just send your questions, comments, and tips to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have more of your calls coming up. Really interesting topic, our medical myth buster 2. Good reasons for you to stay with us here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413, 1-800-462-7413. Before our next call, Zorba, you're going to talk some about sunscreen, you say.
Right. The new FDA rules for sunscreen that are going to take place in 1 year, mm-hmm. I think are dynamite and are actually a very important aspect of the FDA taking control over truth in advertising.
Okay.
I mean, for years you've seen sunscreen that says waterproof.
Yeah.
There is no waterproof sunscreen. It doesn't exist. It's a lie. It's a sham. The FDA said you cannot say waterproof in 1 year because it doesn't exist. Now, why did it take so long for the FDA to finally do it? And the answer is the government passed rules in the healthcare law that allows the FDA to now regulate things like sunscreen.
Yeah.
And then all day long, it can't say all day long. It can either say 40 minutes or 80 minutes because sunscreen doesn't stay on longer than 40 minutes or 80 minutes.
Really?
Right, really? Aren't you shocked?
I am.
So to think you put it on and it stays on for the day? No, it doesn't. It's 40 minutes or 80 minutes. You actually have to reapply it throughout the day.
So what about the different, kinds of
you can, you
30
you,
or
you can,
50?
Well, very interesting in the numbers. If it's less than an SPF of 15, you cannot claim that it has any sun protection factor. 4 and 8 and 12, you can't claim it has any sun protection. And it has to contain a warning on it. This will not protect you against the harmful rays that cause premature aging and sun damage. So anything below 15 basically is going to be out of the market.
Okay, as it gets higher, is it better protection?
There's no evidence that anything over than 50 does anything. There's been sort of a race to the top.
Yeah.
Let's do 80s and 100s and 120s. The FDA says, no, there's no proof that anything over 50 is really worthwhile. So it's going to say 15. And then it can have numbers up to 50, and it can say if it's above 50, it can have a plus, 50 plus.
What does that mean?
Well, that means it's higher than 50.
But 50 is better screen than 30.
Right.
Than 15
is still, the higher the number, the longer it's going to last, the more protection you're going to get. That, of course, is there. But it's not that 60 is better or 75 or 80. The FDA says if you want to make an 80, that's okay. You get to put a plus.
So when we did a beach vacation recently and put on sunscreen and left it on all day,
it only protected us for the first 80 minutes. And here's now the final
minutes.
That's right. Now, here's the final clincher. In order to say broad spectrum, it has to do UVA and UVB. UVB works against burns, but both UVA and UVB rays are what you want to protect you from premature aging and skin cancer. And that's going to be broad spectrum. These warnings and the way that sunscreen will now be advertised is perfect.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Freedom, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Zorba. Hi, Tom.
How can we help?
Well, here's my question. Basically, as I seem to be aging, I'm 44. Mm-hmm. I'm a healthy male runner and keep fairly active. But as I'm aging, I seem to need less sleep than I've needed in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's perhaps a cause of concern for my wife when I wake up at 5:30 in the morning on Saturday and Sunday. But and I wanted to talk to Zorba and see if that was appropriate and if there was anything I should try to do.
Is it that you're noisy or is it that your wife is just unusually critical?
Maybe she's a light sleeper. Maybe I'm a little noisy. Some of both, I suppose.
Unusually critical.
Well,
sure, sleep is being disturbed because he's getting up early in the morning. What's critical about that? Hey, honey, you're disturbing my sleep. You're waking up early.
Well, I've been with my wife a long time,
that's right.
I've been getting up earlier than she does.
That's right. And what does she say about that?
Not a thing. She's perfectly content to have me out of the bed. More room
out of the bed and out of the house. That's exactly. You know, when people in Wisconsin get up early, I say that's because we have lots of cows, you know. You've got to get up and milk those cows. It flies in New York. It doesn't fly in the state.
Maybe it's more my dog who gets up with me when I get up, and then she makes a lot of ruckus.
Ah, you hit part of it. But usually there are inherited differences, I am absolutely convinced, based on what I've read, between sleep and people who need sleep. Forgetting the age thing to the side, many, many people sleep about 6 hours. They feel rested. They get up and they say, I can't sleep 8 hours. I only sleep 6 hours. Other people say, I'm one of those other people, say, I really need 8 hours of sleep. And I do. But I've discovered in the summer, I don't need as much sleep as in the winter. I have no idea why. Must be because the sun is out and you just feel like doing mm-hmm. things. As we get older, often our sleep, you know, becomes more fragmented. That's the issue. It's more fragmented. It's not as deep. You know, when you were a kid, you remember your mom or dad would pick you up and put you in another bed and you never waked up. Well, try that on a sleeping adult and see what happens. You know, it doesn't happen at all. So there's nothing wrong. As long as you feel like you're rested, it's okay to get up at 5:30. Your problem is a family problem. You're getting up and waking up your wife. And that's really, you know, that's kind of the issue.
You're putting it nicely, his problem is his wife.
His problem is not his wife. You are trying to make a problem in his marriage that is not his wife. But I know what you mean, because I tend to get up early. What I do is I get up earlier and I like going to email and doing some other things. Yeah. The dog gets up with me. We're dog people. And I've discovered that when I take the chain off his neck, the collar off his neck, it doesn't tend to wake up my wife. Because it's the jingling of the collar. So I think you hit it on the head. It's your dog that may be doing it. What's your dog's name? What kind of dog do you have?
I have a little Brittany Spaniel. Her name is Fiera.
Uh-huh. Oh, cute name. So does she jump all around when you get up in the morning?
She goes in circles just in one space.
Oh,
crazy.
Well, there's nothing wrong with getting a short amount of sleep, but there's something wrong with waking up your spouse, and that's where I would suggest you start. So good luck to you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot for the call at 800-462-7413.
And I said good luck specifically because solving these problems often takes luck.
Well, Zorba, time now for our medical myth buster. And today's myth deals with the theory that to prevent pet allergies in children, parents should expose their kids to animals. Is that true?
Absolutely is true. And it's part of a whole change that we now have in medicine. So first of all, there's now good evidence, that children who are exposed to pets or farm animals mm-hmm. early on in life are less likely to be allergic to pets and farm animals. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not really often in touch with farm animals. I don't see many pigs.
Yeah.
I don't see many cows. I don't see a lot of horses, but I do see a lot of pets.
Yeah.
And the concept is that the body gets used to it and no longer then develops an allergy to it.
Hmm.
But there are other ideas that are out here that the increase that we're seeing in asthma and in autoimmune diseases throughout our lifespan may be because we are not exposed to enough animal dander, pet dander, dirt in the first couple of years of our life, so that instead of developing antibodies to really these things that may invade or bother our body, we begin to develop antibodies to our body itself. Mm. And we have a heightened immune system that results in allergies and autoimmune diseases. So my read on this is that you actually should expose your child to pets early on in life, because I think it's very useful not just to prevent pet allergies, but maybe to prevent autoimmune diseases and asthma later on.
That's really pretty interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. How did they know that? Did they ask people?
There's been more of an interest in the increase. There's been an increase in autoimmune disease and Crohn disease, and other problems within society and asthma. And so there's been more and more research looking at it, and we find that it's more city folk that are likely to get it. And now then they started doing research to look at it. And kids who live on farms, and there are fewer and fewer kids that live on farms anymore, but kids who basically play with dirt and eat dirt, and I'm not recommending you go have your child eat dirt, but are in a dirty environment, a less sterile environment, appear to have less autoimmune disease and appear to have less asthma and fewer allergies. So there must be something about the exposure early on that's useful. So send your kids, if you don't have a dog, to play with somebody's dog, and that's the way to handle childhood.
Interesting stuff. You can prevent myth allergies by sending your medical myths to the show. Send them along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org, and Thor and Zeus will answer your questions.
1-800-462-7413, toll free. And a listener with us now, Zorba, in Memphis, Tennessee. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, I have advanced glaucoma, and there's been some trouble with keeping the pressure in my eyes stable. A couple of my friends have told me that they've heard that marijuana smoking not only can temporarily bring down the pressure, but that some compounds are being isolated, and that there's hope that marijuana might even perhaps not cure, but really have some longer-lasting benefit for glaucoma patients. But I'm having difficulty finding sites.
Yeah, and I assume you've gone through all of the different drops which they give you.
Yes, and the one that's affecting me the most is the beta blocker and the timolol, so that I have a bit of a challenge with the lowering of the blood pressure. Uh-huh. But I'm taking Travitan and a timolol-brimonidine combination.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. There have been great strides in glaucoma, certainly over the last 25 years, between the use of beta blockers and other medications. The old-fashioned drug, carbonic anhydrase inhibitor, a drug called Diamox, which has some significant side effects. It also is used for mountain sickness. I've taken it, and the side effects of tingling fingers can be very difficult. So these drops have been good, as well as laser treatment to the eye. And then you've got the outliers where none of this seems to work. And, medical marijuana, and I've not read any research on it. I've just seen that it may be useful in glaucoma. But once again, I've never seen any research on it. I've just said it. May be very useful. They are isolating compounds. And it's very interesting because tetrahydrocannabinol, which is the main ingredient in marijuana that gets you high, when it's been isolated and used in pill form, which it was in research, was quite interesting. When you block that receptor, the receptor that you stimulate with pot, you end up getting people who start to lose weight. There's been research done on a couple of compounds where people have lost 80 to 100 pounds of weight with these receptor blockers. But they had side effects, and the side effects were suicidal thoughts.
Yep.
It was very, very interesting. Mm. It blocked the munchies. It blocked the desire to eat and then produced suicidal thoughts. You know, the problem with medical marijuana and something like this is the side effect, which is marijuana makes you stoned.
Yeah.
You know, so if you had to take it, if you had to smoke something 3 or 4 times a day, you couldn't get your work done. You know,
yeah.
So I mean, it has a significant side effect. On the other hand, if taking a dose in the evening when you want to go to sleep would work, that would be something you would use for. But I haven't seen any research on that, which is what your question is about. What state do you live in?
Tennessee.
Tennessee.
And there's no medical marijuana in Tennessee. You'll have to move to Michigan. That's the closest state. So.
It's summertime in Memphis. I may do that.
Good luck to you.
Oh, thank you very much.
And thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. Before we get out of here for the week, Zorba, we have another case for Judge Zorba. And this one has some money on the line.
I'm getting my gavel ready. Okay, I'm getting my gavel ready.
What do you do to get a gavel ready?
You got to make sure. You know, it's like singing. You got to say a few notes beforehand. You got to make sure you've got to get just the right tone in the gavel, or
you can't actually express
yourself.
Well, today's case comes from Kathy and deals with you. I'll let Kathy explain. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, my husband and I have a bet, $50, that Dr. Zorba Pastor is or is not your real name. He says Dr. Zorba was taken from the boss on Dr. Kildare, and Pastor is just too much like Pasteur, you know, the penicillin discoverer. I say, what if Dr. Pastor is his real name? He also says that you won't or maybe can't really tell us the truth. If he's right, who wins?"
I can definitely tell them the truth, there's no doubt. Well, first of all, Dr. Zorba wasn't on Dr. Kildare. He was on Ben Casey.
Yeah.
I mean, let's...
Yeah.
Put that into
That's
there.
That's right. Yeah.
Let's put that into there. And Pastor is not Pasteur from French. It is a shortening of a Polish name. My grandfather got to the border.
Pastor, yeah.
It was P-A-S-T-E-R. Let's cut off the letters and get rid of the rest of the consonants, which was pretty typical of what happened in 1904. And let us put it this way. Zorba is my legal name. The answer is? Both right. And that's where we leave it.
That isn't exactly the whole story.
Oh, no. The whole story is something we cannot really discuss.
I know.
Oh, yes,
Zorba's birth.
Yes, you know.
Given name, but.
You know the backstory.
But if I tell, I will die. Am I right?
You are right. And that's the rest of the story.
If you need Judge Zorba, if that really is your name, to settle your lifestyle case or just to settle a bet, just send your email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Executive producer Adam Friedrich and technical director Brad Kohlberg took a short reprieve from their night's watch on the wall to produce this hour. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you're with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0616Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.